This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Monday, the 3rd of March. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. In an explosive article written towards the tail end of last week for Foreign Policy magazine in Washington, Cyril Ramaphosa launched an aggressive attack against Israel and the United States, doubling down on his conflict with the Trump administration. I spoke to Leon Low, a well-known business and economics expert from the Freedom Foundation, and he says he may not be an expert on foreign policy, but he is an expert on business. He brings Cyril's foreign policy stance and alienation of the US down to the rands and cents impact that it could have on the South African economy.
President Ramaphosa's article is a diatribe against Israel. It's weird, actually, that a head of state at the southern tip of Africa should devote so much effort and passion and attention to attacking another country, but he has his reasons. But what I will point out is that by attacking the United States and belittling the United States and doing to the United States what Trump and J.D. Vance thought Zelensky was doing, what you do is you cost South Africa one hell of a lot of money, just bearing in mind that the foreign aid we get is not government-to-government aid. It's free. It's mostly health care aid, about 8 billion rand or so. And, you know, that's enough to have another 8,000 police. So literally, if you alienate the United States and they withdraw their healthcare aid, and then they withdraw other aid, AGOA, African Growth and Opportunity Act, is not aid, it's just free access to the American economy, that's worth probably something like about 20 billion rand, about 200 billion rand to South Africa. And there you're talking about something like 200,000 RDP houses or thousands of new police. So, by the way, if you play recklessly with the US and with Trump, you are increasing, and I want to put it bluntly, the number of people who are going to get raped because we will have less police. You know, that's the point. We will have more murder and rape and robbery as a consequence of having that amount of wealth less in the country. And you know, the loss of HIV/AIDS expenditure, we will have that much less. Now, you've got to think of that.
Well, on that point, on that point, Leon, I mean, we know that PEPFAR funding has been permanently cancelled, right? Permanently cancelled.
Yes.
So we've already seen consequences of foreign policy actions antagonizing the U.S.
And just, you know, I talk about economics and business and markets, but I want to point out that money means lives, people, flesh and blood. There will be more people dead by gruesome means. You know, we need to understand that numbers that people like you and I and BizNews talk about have a human flesh and blood dimension to them. And so every time you hear or read about some little girl being raped somewhere, say, thank you for alienating the United States. If you hear of people dying of HIV/AIDS, it's a gruesome, horrible thing to witness and to happen, then you must understand that's the price that has been chosen to be paid by us in South Africa for what must be considered very reckless international relations, for whatever the political motives, which I don't understand or pretend to understand or know about, but I do know about the economics, and the economical consequences is death and gruesome suffering of HIV patients and lack of policing and lack of jobs and lack of homeless people living under bridges and in shacks where I work. By the way, that's where most of my work is in lowest income group communities. And these people are inspirational. They're wonderful. They're humbling at how they cope with their conditions. And all of them could have a house. You could literally have housing for every homeless South African with the money that is being wasted by this reckless international relations conduct.
Alec Hogg also spoke to political scientist Dr. Franz Cornier, who warns that this continued provocation could be disastrous for South Africa, prompting not only sanctions, but South Africa could also be thrown out of AGOA, which would bring South Africa's, or rather could bring South Africa's agricultural and motor sectors to their knees.
How did you interpret what they wrote?
I thought it was a very aggressive attack that essentially said to hell with the United States and with the Trump administration and with Israel and with the Israeli leadership. I don't think they could have put it any firmer than that in the way in which they conveyed the message. Sanctions are took a great leap forward yesterday after this foreign affairs piece, and not sure what that's going to be, but if this continues, the sanctions may look like this. There may be actions against specific South African individuals or institutions that are seen to threaten the interests of the United States or act in a corrupt fashion or threaten human rights around the world. Those may be preceded by some actions on AGOA, but remember, AGOA is a very small proportion of South African exports. If you export under AGOA, of course, that's of little comfort to you. And the country's auto industry may be brought down by this. But that's a step. Then you get to more targeted sanctions. And beyond that, the one that I think South African institutions, banks and the like need to watch most carefully, the greatest risk for them is sanctions on the holding of South African government debt. If that step is later taken, then the consequences inside the South African economy and for really anyone that does business here, but financial institutions in particular, will be very, very serious. My sense of it, Alec, is that there is a small little core somewhere inside the government and the ANC that has captured South Africa's foreign policy machinery, and that they're driving that foreign policy for an object. I mean, this is we see this time and time again, driving foreign policy for whatever the objective is, but entirely at odds with the interest of the country and with its people, and entirely at odds ultimately with the interest of the ANC itself. And it just makes you think again of this point that don't think the ANC had to lose the election last year. It would have been the simplest thing in the world for them not to have done so. But the Brains Trust, as you mentioned, that brought about that catastrophic result, seemed to be some of the same Brains Trust that's bringing about this foreign policy result, and it's going to have catastrophic consequences again. For South Africa, it's going to have catastrophic consequences as a direct consequence of that for the African National Congress.
Alec also spoke to Joel Pollack, the Johannesburg-born Breitbart senior editor and front runner for the US ambassador to South Africa. He says Cyril's article is tantamount to suicide for both Cyril himself and South Africa.
There's a portion of the article that actually likens Donald Trump to an apartheid leader or an authoritarian leader because of his suggestion for evacuating the population of Gaza and rebuilding it under U.S. control. All of that is against American foreign policy, against American national security interests, and it means that South Africa is now explicitly violating the terms of the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which specifies explicitly that countries that benefit from the act cannot operate in the international arena in a way that's counter to the United States, either in terms of foreign policy or national security, and also to the allies of the United States. But in this case, it really is not just about Israel. It's also about the United States and Donald Trump's focus on the ICC as a threat to the security interests of the United States because of the way it's conducted itself. So in the context of an effort to repair relations between the two governments, to come out with an article like this is raising the stakes significantly, and it's actually given the Trump administration an excuse, if it needed one, to formally kick South Africa out of AGOA and also to consider sanctions against Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC for their conduct. This is a war that Iran and its proxies have lost. So why is South Africa weighing in on the losing side of a war? You know, this is a losing strategy. And it then raises questions about who's actually driving this policy. Is this being driven by Iran, Iranian money? Is it being driven by China, China's attempt to regain influence in the Middle East? China has largely been cut out of the Middle East. At the recent Riyadh summit, the Chinese were basically absent. Now, under Joe Biden, the Chinese did play a larger role. They did negotiate a kind of restoration of relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that agreement happened in Beijing. So China definitely wants a larger role. But they have been elbowed out again. And one wonders if the South African government is playing into China's influence by doing this. But again, if so, they're playing a dangerous game, and they're allowing South Africa to be a pawn in China's effort to exert hegemony over the world, rather than acting as a truly non-aligned nation. And again, the signal is that there's no mention of Hamas or terrorism. I don't know how any democratic government, any free government, can take the position that Hamas's terrorism doesn't matter, or more explicitly in South Africa's arguments at the ICJ, that certain forms of terrorism are entirely justified, that it's acceptable to kill innocent people as long as you're doing it for the right reason. So I think South Africa is taking some very dangerous steps here, and I don't know if the South African public has been told why. I think as long as the South African government remains on this path, and especially in a context where there's a need for compromise and there's a desire for discussion and negotiation, if South Africa shows a willingness to compromise, I think introducing the argument that Donald Trump is like an apartheid ruler and that Donald Trump is wrong to sanction the ICC and that Israel should be absolutely pursued for alleged violations of international law. We won't mention what occasioned its war in Gaza. We'll just accuse Israel. Doing that in this context at this time is potentially disastrous, I think, for relations between the two countries, certainly for South Africa's participation in AGOA, and perhaps for the personal financial situation of the leaders of the ANC itself, because you're giving, in fact, you're practically inviting Donald Trump to do something to respond now that they've gone after him personally, and now that they've explicitly opposed something that the United States has identified as a core national security interest, which is the idea that American soldiers will not be subject to the jurisdiction of these multilateral bodies to which the United States has not acceded. You know, you don't have to sign the Rome Statute. Countries don't have to agree to these treaties. If you don't agree to be governed by the rules of the International Criminal Court, it has no jurisdiction. But now Ramaphosa is saying it should have jurisdiction, not just over Donald Trump and the United States and American soldiers, but also over the Israeli prime minister, whom Ramaphosa thinks he can arrest. Well, let's see what happens. If the ANC thinks they can arrest foreign leaders, then let the ANC finances come into the open and let's see what international criminal bodies do about that.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Retired U.S. intelligence officer Colonel Wyatt also enters the fray with his thoughts on what he deems to be a nonsensical foreign policy move.
Honestly, I'm heartbroken right now. This is hard. This doesn't have to be like this. It doesn't have to be like this. The United States and South Africa established a bilateral commission in the aftermath of the end of apartheid, where we worked together to try to help each other. And that worked well for a number of years. And here we find ourselves now on the precipice of a very sour relationship that's wholly unnecessary. The United States did not ask to be ignored for 5 months about the late ER when we politely, diplomatically, quietly, and in private asked for an answer and were ignored and rebuffed by the South African government. The United States did not do many of the things that South Africa has done contrary to our interests. So what's next? Well, my concern is that there's going to wind up to some serious economic repercussions here. Look, the loss of foreign aid is terrible, but it's $500 million. It's big news for South Africa and affects a lot of people, but doesn't affect America that much. Not going to save us that much money. The the sanctioning of political leaders seems to be something very much on the table. You know, people are talking about AfriForum and Solidarity coming to the States. One of their biggest arguments, apparently, with the administration and officials in Congress is, please don't stop AGOA. It affects all South Africans. Last night, I interviewed members of Solidarity and the AfriForum movements when I went down to Maryland, met with them. And their biggest argument was that we talked about this. You know, this isn't about Afrikaners, AGOA, and the trade. It's about South Africans. AGOA trade affects all South Africans. So will the leaders of South Africa's ANC be sanctioned? I'll tell you what, Ramaphosa just keeps upping the ante. And I don't know what he thinks he's accomplishing here. China, Russia, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, members of BRICS, none have stepped forward to offer anything to fill the gap in the United States. The European Union, which is making a lot of noise and interjecting themselves into this relationship, and now they're putting themselves in a bad spot, they've offered nothing. I don't see anyone in the last 22 years offering $400 million a year to fight HIV in South Africa, except the American taxpayer. And, you know, Trump is not messing around. Like him, love him, hate him, it doesn't matter. The guy's not messing around. And ask Colombia, ask Mexico, ask Canada, ask Denmark. You know, the guy is making waves, and he's, you know, it's funny because the media keeps saying, he's so coercive. That's coercive diplomacy. Have you ever worked in diplomacy? Diplomacy is coercive, just like business negotiations. It's coercive. That's what it's all about, is having advantage over your negotiating partner. And that's what Trump is doing right now. Ramaphosa has no advantage here. I don't know who he thinks is going to come rescue South Africa. I think that he wants sanctions. I think he wants to be punished so he can play the role of martyr. You know, I mean, all of this aside, the fact that he ran around screaming vaccine apartheid when we gave South Africa $711 million to manufacture a vaccine, is that insult is being ignored by people. This list of transgressions runs back a number of years, and writing op-eds in foreign policy attacking Israel and the United States obliquely is not going to help the situation. It's getting ugly here, and I think that AGOA may very soon come off the table. South Africa technically is not even eligible for it. They've broken the rules that they agreed to abide by enacting expropriation without compensation. Sacrosanct or private property rights, you must respect them, and paying zero compensation to someone regardless of historical disadvantages or grievances or past mistakes, that's not germane. And South Africa's not eligible. So that's easy to do. AGOA will go. 230,000 jobs in South Africa directly tied to AGOA. And if you think South Africa can afford to lose 230,000 jobs with negative or flat growth, you know, 3.4% of South Africa's economy is directly tied to U.S. trade. This is a bad situation. And my suggestion to the ANC is to stop talking and politely sit back and then work out your differences with Washington.
Staying with South Africa's economy, I caught up with Anne Bernstein, the executive director at the Center for Development and Enterprise, who says the small business department in South Africa should be closed with immediate effect, and that in favor of the private sector, who can actually help develop small businesses in the country. Bernstein says the private sector would make much better use of the 6 billion rand of taxpayers' money spent annually by the small business department. At the very least, they will ensure, that is the private sector, that the spending can be tracked and impact measured.
Whatever made us think that officials, most of whom do not know how to run small businesses or any business through no fault of their own, have got no experience of this, what makes us think that these are the ideal people to use public money to promote a dynamic and innovative small business sector? So we're questioning that. We're saying this is the wrong concept. Now, the Small Business Development Department has been in existence since 2014. And when you look at the numbers, it's very hard to see what's actually been achieved. Now, it's important to understand that small business funding takes place throughout government in many different departments, and not just the small business department. But we're really saying that this is the wrong way to think about this. We did some research in 2018, 19, and 2021 across 3 years. And we said to a highly respected research firm, go in to the state and tell us how much money is being spent on small business promotion, support, development. They came back quite shocked. And they said that, well, it's at least somewhere around 6 billion a year, but we think that's an undercount. But there's no information on What criteria are used to select the small businesses we support? How do they do after the state uses our money to support them? Do they grow? Do they thrive? Do they employ more people? So we don't actually know exactly what happens. The more you think about it, this is an incredible waste of a really big sum of money, 6 billion rand a year, at least.
As you say, the Small Business Department has been in existence to 2014. And as you've again reiterated, it's that lack of measurability, lack of accountability. If you can measure something, you can manage something. And that is what struck me when I was listening to the conversation with you and Ashraf, is that there's absolutely no way that you can or anybody else can measure the effectiveness of this department, which has to be the starting point to say it's not working.
There are some numbers. Most people, experts would say they're not all that reliable, but their growth in the number of small businesses, which is a topic I'll come back to in a moment, has not been great. Then COVID decimated this sector. And in fact, the government's own small business sort of development plan in 2022 said that there were low survival rates for small businesses and that the sort of inefficient support was one of the reasons. Now, I would put it differently. I would say that, so we do know things are not going well, and government or the department acknowledges that. I think you've got to think about small business differently in another way as well, which is we have to fix the economy for all businesses. So infrastructure, dealing with crime, a whole lot of regulatory things, all sorts of things, logistics, these affect businesses small and big. And the whole point about a thriving economy is that we want dynamic small businesses that become bigger. We don't want lots and lots of little businesses that never move from being kind of one-person activities. We're looking for dynamism and innovation, and all our big companies started small, really. So you have to think about this as not a separate entity called small business, but a dynamic part of our economy and all businesses.
That full interview with Anne Bernstein is available on biznews.tv, the YouTube platform. And that brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back with more local and global context tomorrow. Thanks as always for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.